Good morning. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend and Chefs in the City. And I'm joined this morning by a couple of guests, including our resident interviewer, Rich Terapak. It is the height of growing season in Central Ohio. Chefs across the city celebrate the taste and quality of locally grown food. Joining us today is the executive chef at the Crest Gastro Pub in Clintonville, Dustin Brayford, and Abed Al-Shahal, who is the Crest Sustainability Strategist, which is very interesting. We're going to find out what that is, and WOSU food reviewer Rich Terapak. So this was a quaint neighborhood hangout, kind of a little pub in the middle of Clintonville, and you took it and did what?
Well, we took a established neighborhood bar, just kind of revamped it a little bit. We put a rooftop garden on top of the roof, installed the rain garden, and really the idea is to have a restaurant space that's focused on community engagement, environmental interactions, and serving good quality food.
So you really bit off a lot.
Yeah, biting off a lot, still continuing to chew.
Chew well. You also kicked out the barber next door, so you expanded the space, didn't you? Wasn't there somebody else adjacent to the restaurant?
No, the restaurant was just on its own, just on a little island on Crestview in Indianola.
Same size. Long time ago, back in the early 60s, it was two places.
Well, you're asking them to dig deep here.
I'll get the photos. I don't know if it was as good then.
So what was your vision for the food, Dustin?
Basically, with my background and my inspiration of food is just Mediterranean fresh food. And being that we have the resources to grow on site, it's so easy to make that, you know, come alive with our product. I mean, these guys have given us the awesome garden to grow and be able to go pick fresh food out of it and make fresh quality taste available for everybody.
So you were just saying before we went on the air that the garden is beginning to grow and to give off product. What are you growing up there?
A lot of our herbs that we use in our cocktails are grown right on the roof or right on the cocktail garden. A lot of kale.
You have a cocktail garden.
Yeah. a lot of kale coming out right now. Tomatoes are starting to pop up. I think we're about a month away from them.
Eggplants.
Yeah, little baby eggplants going on the roof as well.
And besides garden on the roof, you're going to have seating on the roof. Is that correct?
Yeah. Here within the next few weeks, we'll have room for 30 people on the roof for different workshops, educational events, just a little lounge area. So it'll give us a lot of opportunity to take the stress off the floor.
Yeah.
We're often on a wait.
A little bit of an overflow.
Yeah, great.
Typically, running a restaurant is a pretty consuming business. There's the building to take care of. There's the staff to take care of. There's payroll. There's all sorts of things. But it sounds to me like you've made this bigger than just a restaurant. It's more about other things than just food.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really, the idea is to utilize a restaurant as a platform for social change. Because if we look at our food system, it's not necessarily the most efficient right now. And really, we're focusing on strengthening our community relations and food systems and food accessibility, because there's a demand for slow foods, alternative foods. We understand the negative consequences of the conventional system. However, our local food system isn't set up in a way that can sustain those slow foods for a restaurant. So really, the question is, how can we strategize accessibility logistically and economically? So,
your friends at, for instance, the North Star have essentially hired farmers to raise their beets specifically because of that issue. Have you looked into doing something like that?
Yeah, we actually work with several farmers where we have farm strategy, investing into the farm itself. Issue that arises with that is when you have a restaurant that gets so much food and you have 15 farmers coming at 15 different times.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a logistical nightmare.
Sure.
So the question is, how can we support our local food system in a way where it kind of takes the stress off the kitchen, which already has a million things to worry about? There's a reason that a lot of restaurants don't take this approach, and it's because it takes a lot of work. So fortunately, we have a strong community partners around us, a very passionate team, and we are driven to really strategize this and figure out a way where it can become more efficient.
Terrific.
We're talking with the executive chef at the Crest Gastro Pub, Dustin Brayford, and Abed Al-Shahal, who is the Crest sustainability strategist, and now we can see why. This is a fairly complicated system. Not only are you growing food, you're working with farmers. I assume you're going to farmers markets and things like that around the city as well. How many people can sit there now? How many diners can come in?
We can fit about 150 on a nice day.
That's a lot, and it always
outside
looks
jam-packed. Outside and on the roof and those things. It's about 90 to 100 inside.
Inside, yeah.
So you can't necessarily feed all of these people within your own garden.
No, it's we try to attack certain things and
yeah, things such as herbs. For example, last year we were growing basil on the roof, and we grew 160 pounds of basil. We're still using some of that basil. We processed it into a pesto. So there are certain herbs where... certain herbs and certain produce where we can't sustain completely. But we can't do this all on our own. We need to build up micro producers locally. And really, it's not just about the locality. It's about the methods that are used to grow these foods. So we're growing on about 2,000 square feet. So that is absolutely not enough to sustain an entire restaurant.
So are you finding cooperation? Are you finding cooperative partners out there?
Yeah, I think Columbus, in terms of the Midwest... and even on the national level, from the grassroots, people are committed to slow foods, foods that benefit the environment, the local economics, and just the social interactions. Actually, just 2 years ago, there's an organization called Slow Food, and Columbus had the most representatives in the nation in Italy. So it really shows that
no, we like to go to Italy, too.
Yeah. So explain, if you will, one or the other of you, what exactly is slow food?
Slow food is a mindset, right? We hear a lot of talk about local foods, but local foods doesn't say anything about the methods used to grow the food. So making sure that the people who are growing the food are treated fairly, getting fair wages, making sure that the food grown is healthy for the people consuming it. It's we're not just bombarding it with pesticides and herbicides where we don't understand the consequences. So really that holistic mindset about where your food is coming from and how it affects not just your hunger, but all the consequences or all the interactions beyond that, beyond what you see in front of the plate in front of you.
Mm-hmm. So is this a plant-based diet if you were to embrace slow food?
Some people would argue it that way. I personally like enjoying meat. I like chicken. I like beef. So, for example, we get bison locally, and it's just a micro producer out of Grove City. Mm-hmm. It's one of the only sources of bison within Columbus. So I would argue you have people who are committed to treating their animals fairly, and it's good to enjoy things in moderation. I wouldn't say eat steak every single day of your life, but...
But you can enjoy several Ohio beers in moderation as well, as I recall.
Yes, we have 20 Ohio beers on tap, always rotating. We actually have a nationally recognized beer list, 60 beers changing almost every day.
Yeah.
So
wow.
And Dustin, you said that some of the influence on the food was Mediterranean. Where does that come from?
That just comes from my 3 years I spent in Beirut and just... basically, the idea of like this local food thing, that's just the way of life in Beirut. You know, I used to go and have the guy bring me my calamari that he caught from the sea. So this mindset is just, to me, is natural. And I got to see a lot of that and got to have hands-on experience. So coming back and bringing it here has just been, it's been a treat. It's been fun. And it's the, everybody around us, and especially in Clintonville, the community is, they believe it, they live it. And that's nice to be able to bring that back to that community and as well received as it is.
So is it easier to adapt that kind of food to this whole movement?
It's just fresh.
Yeah.
You know, and fresh food is good food, in my opinion.
So I can stop by the restaurant when I can't find cilantro at Weiland's or something?
Just bring your scissors.
Okay.
Have you opened up the rooftop to other people?
We haven't. It's... we're about two, 3 weeks away.
No, I can see him leaving here with a scissors.
Well, we have plenty of herbs on the ground level as well. We have a garden on the front, touching on the Indianola side, and one that wraps around the patio.
Yeah, it's been a good season for the basil's going crazy. I was going to offer you some, but I guess you don't need it. Yeah.
Are you working with somebody who's telling you, well, it would be best to put the basil here and the sage over here and the mint on this side? Is somebody advising you about that?
Yeah, we have a lady by the name of Trish on our staff. She heads all the gardening and the logistics of where we should plant things. We're figuring it out as we go. Mm-hmm. It's been an experiment, to say it most simply.
Yeah.
So a lot to learn. We just got done planting a rain garden with friends of the Lower Olentangy River watershed and Amy Dutt of Urban Wild.
Oh.
It's a berry garden, an edible rain garden.
Well, with all the rain we've had this year, it ought to be very successful. Now, I understand you do bring in guest chefs from time to time. A woman named Alexis Joseph, who writes a food blog, who I think is a vegan or a vegetarian, cooked there not too long ago. Is that an ongoing program?
Yeah, absolutely. I think collaboration is the word. The word of the year, the word of the next 10 years. Really, it's not just about us. It's about how we could build people up around us. And somebody like Alexis, she's a passionate individual, registered dietitian and a nutritionist, who's really pushing the boundaries of the way food is done. So bringing them on and giving them a platform to highlight what it is that they're doing, where otherwise it'd be very difficult.
That was a great evening.
Yeah.
That was an awesome experience.
And you're about to embark on a new experience as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
We're about 3 weeks away from opening up the market in Italian Village, which is going to be a European-inspired bistro with retail space. It's a great place for us to put together all this local sourcing that we've been working on for a year and a half and be able to give it to the public. I mean, you can elaborate a little more on the...
Yeah, the market, Italian Village, is on Summit and 3rd. It's a retail space / bistro, so only 8 tables within the restaurant. So we'll really get to focus on each individual plate coming out. And going back to just sourcing the foods, where at times it's more difficult to source for a large volume, being able to focus on each individual ingredient. Really, everything within the market has a story behind it, whether it's a 25-year-aged bottle of vinegar, barrel-aged, or sourcing local produce from Swainway Urban Farms or Sun Sprout, mm-hmm. and being able to highlight that and pass that knowledge on. Because, like I said, it's not just about the locality. It's the methods and the story behind your food.
Are you finding it easy to staff the kitchens? Are there enough chefs around?
That's been something that's, if you guys are looking for a job, please approach us. We're looking for passionate individuals to really support our team.
Yeah, Columbus State and Bradford are cranking out some people. Has that been helpful?
There's a lot of talent here in Columbus. And after being gone for so long and coming back and seeing this white canvas that the city is, it's there's a lot of young, passionate people that support and believe the things that we do. And fortunately, we've been lucky enough to attract them.
I think you have, because the food proves it. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and we want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Dustin Brayford, executive chef and sustainability strategist, Abed Al-Shahal of the Crest Gastropub. My goodness, this is a mouthful. 2855 Indianola Avenue in Clintonville. Best of luck to both of you, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm joined again this morning by WOSU food reviewers Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, who all write food reviews for our website, wosu.org/chefsinthecity. And you really ought to check it out. There are lots of new reviews there.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we've been talking about fresh, locally grown food this morning. How important is it to you when you go out to eat that the chef has access to locally grown food? We're seeing it more and more. There's a rooftop garden downtown at Latitude 41.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned the Top before in Bexley.
Tip Top does as well.
Tip Top,
on Gay, yeah.
Right downtown.
Yeah.
So it's more than a trend. It's something that people are, you know, doing, and they're sustaining it.
And it's wonderful. It absolutely is to have. This is the best time of the year for food. You're starting to get. First, we had our first Ohio sweet corn yesterday. We've had our first tomatoes out of the garden and fresh basil. I mean,
it inspires the chefs too. I think they get excited about the fact that, you know, the basil's ready to harvest, or the cilantro, or, you know, you got some, you know. Never.
Well, my husband and I went out after the Doodah parade this year to a local restaurant, and we were having some drinks and enjoying ourselves, and there were strawberries in it, and they were so delicious. Mm-hmm. I think everybody was just gulping down these drinks
pickled.
To get
no,
to the. No, somebody was, but.
but it's such a just, short season. I'm
it
sorry
is absolutely.
For the. At the North Market, you could get strawberries for 4 weeks, four Saturdays in a row. You could get them, and we would buy 2 quarts at a time at a not insignificant price, mm-hmm. but we just sort of – and we had our last strawberry day before yesterday, and there's such a world of difference between those and the ones that taste slightly like the carton that you get at the grocery store.
Yeah, like styrofoam or mm-hmm. something. But it was almost like – this is the way I remember berries mm-hmm. when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And you simply – you're right. You can only get them for a very short period of time and pay dearly.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful what they're doing with the you know, self-growth of these. You know, I heard Adep say on the interview earlier that, you know, they're still using up the basil from last year. I do the same thing. We grow, you know, 8 different herbs in our backyard, and, you know, we chop it up and throw them in ice cube trays with water and actually freeze them over the winter, and you just pull them out during the winter and melt them. So you can actually use this season throughout the year if you store things correctly.
That's good to know. I can go over and steal some.
Yeah, we got plenty.
I thought you were going to say it's a good thing to try.
So, but have you heard about any new restaurant-associated gardens lately? Or
I think you went tick to the list pretty well. Almost everybody's got a little garden, and
like, Black Creek does. A good
yeah, they've always had an heritage garden.
They have
a farm. Yeah,
and we were
farm.
At the Greenbrier, and they've got a whole farm now, and they're even raising beef over in West Virginia. So it's more than just a trend. I think it's – and actually, I think you'll probably see more and more restaurants with their own gardens, either on-site or elsewhere.
Well, it's so easy. And with the cost of produce, you know, what it has become over the last few years, just with the cost of gasoline, you know, and transporting mm-hmm. it – you know, it's economical for them, and it's so much fresher. It's just, I mean, it's a win-win. And, you know, like Dad said, the chefs, I think, really enjoy it and inspires them. You know, if they've got, you know, more of something than something else, it really, you know, they shape their menu around that. Mm-hmm. And, it's good on so many levels.
Yeah.
And add all the great farm markets that are available today
right.
as well.
And, but this whole idea of locally grown fresh food, it doesn't feel like a fad. I mean, this is something that has come on the scene, and it's really been embraced, and I don't think we'll ever go back.
Even non-foodies are.
It was a fad 3 years ago. Now it's kind of the way to do business.
Right.
That's good, yeah.
Right. So let's take a look at what's happening with one more fresh-oriented place. There's a new market coming to Columbus called Fresh Time Farmers Market. Mm-hmm. It's on Sawmill in the former Borders Bookstore. Another one is planned for Worthington in 2016. Is the market big enough for all these? We've got Whole Foods, we've got Hills Market, we've got all
Lucky's
sorts of
now in Lucky's Columbus and Clintonville.
Clintonville.
I think it's a burgeoning market, and if you see the crowds, we've been to the Clintonville and the Worthington and the North Market in the last month, and they are jammed with people. And mm-hmm. so I think those kind of farmers markets plus farm markets. Richie has a list of farm markets that are – there's actually a blog on WSU.org about some of them. It's a year old, but still very – farmers markets and farm markets, and then grocery stores that are doing the right thing and bringing in Ohio produce. And they get it now because they're advertising Ohio produce, local produce. We bought some sweet corn at Rife's yesterday, and it said Circleville.
Cool.
Yeah, I can tell you that the Bexley Farmers Market, which is the one I get to most frequently on Thursday nights at Parkview in Maine, it's really grown in the last 3 years. And, I mean, half the booths sell out of food by the end, so that tells mm-hmm. me there's still plenty of room for you know, supply rather than because the demand is there. There's a very good resource also on ohioproud.org, which has a farmers market directory of about 600 different farmers markets across the state. So if you're not aware of one in your area, that's a good resource.
One of our reporters did a story maybe a year and a half ago about local foods, and it actually comes down to a 200 or 250-mile radius is still considered local. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're seeing now is much more localized than that. It's it's in the central
We're in an agricultural state, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't have to go far here.
Yeah, as long as they can maintain smaller farms, you know, a lot of it is mega agribusiness, and we got to keep the little ones going. So
yeah, now the cost of farmland has gone up considerably over the last 10 years.
We've jumped the gun. We followed corn and tomatoes from Tennessee to southern Ohio, and now it's in central Ohio. Yeah. So.
292-8513. We're talking about food and restaurants in Central Ohio with our reviewers, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, who all write for our blog, wosu.org/chefsinthecity. Columbus Mayor Michael Coleman and the city's development director met this week with Greg Cook. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He's the co-founder of the Stone Brewing Company in California. There is a possibility he is a Central Ohio native looking for a way to expand east of the Mississippi and may choose Columbus. From what I understand, it's an enormous enterprise, a huge brewery and restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And he's from Pataskala or something like that.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Well, in the distribution avenues that the chamber always talks about, you know, within 500 miles of three-quarters of the population of the country helps. And so if they're looking for an eastern location for the distribution, it should be a natural.
And as far as, you know, talent and labor goes, we've seen a huge influx of new breweries and, you know, people specialized in that trade
so much
here
so
in Central.
That there are no more hops.
Yeah, no, it's true. They've run. It's tough to get them. So I think in that regard as well, it'd be a very strategic location for them.
And my brother, who's a master brewer by trade, lives in Chicago, said that Columbus is actually considered a very big beer town, not only because of Anheuser-Busch. So that might be an incentive for them, the Stone Brewers, to come here.
And 10 local universities, I suppose.
292-8513. If you have questions for our reviewers this morning, go ahead and give us a call. You can also email us or contact us through Facebook. Steve, as always, he's done much of my research for me. He's the co-producer of the show this morning. There's a lot going on. And surprisingly, a number of restaurants have recently closed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does happen. There are cycles. We had a real huge burst of growth in the last year, but some of it is coming full circle. T. Murray's closed. We just did a review of Jerry's Galaxy Cafe. Rich can talk about Chez Du Bon and what happened there.
Yvonne Sarber has closed Chez Du Bon, which had only been open for about 6 months.
And had gotten great reviews.
Yeah, and it was good.
We were there four times.
Yeah, she did seem to go through a few chefs along the way, so I think it was a work in progress. She quickly, like over a weekend, redecorated the place and opened it as a fish restaurant called Finn, which she originally intended to put over on Pearl and Lynn, and she's now opened, I guess, as of this week, a place called Oliver's, which is a sports bar downtown.
She's rivaling Liz Lesner in her
prolific
taking over downtown.
A little competition.
So, that's good for downtown, though.
Yeah, it is.
What's the difference then between Finn and Chez Du Bon?
Just focus on seafood. There are some French items on the menu. Some of the special dinner events look pretty good. She's going to be doing an ahi tuna tartare kind of night, oysters night, a mini crab cakes. All those kinds of things are coming up. At lunch, she has a thin chopped salad, which includes some scallops and those kinds of items. Let's see. And she also has, by the way, for those jazz and blues fans, every Friday and Saturday from 7 to 10:30, she's got jazz at no charge.
She used to own the Von.
Von Jazz? Or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And still owns another restaurant downtown whose name is
Manifesto and De Novo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the Fab Restaurant Group.
8513. Catherine has joined us this morning. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, I grow vegetables and herbs, and I sell them to the public, and I also sell them to a couple of eating establishments. And I just was hoping that there'd be more of an awareness of things being in season. You know, there's an education process that has to go on. Unfortunately, we got so far removed from growing our food that people don't understand that you're not going to have peaches in April. And you know, if you go to a restaurant and they seem to have a lot of two or three things in the menu, and, you know, don't get frustrated with them. And or if the farmer's market doesn't have, you know, lettuce in August, you know, it's because it's not growing. It may be growing somewhere in the world at that time, but it doesn't grow here. And there needs to be a little shift in our expectations. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a consumer like everybody else, and I've gotten used to being able to get anything I want anytime I want. But you've got to be a little understanding that you can't come to my farm stand in first week of May and expect to get tomatoes.
Particularly this year. you couldn't even get the plants in the ground.
Well, that's true. And people don't always understand that asparagus is at its peak in the spring, for example, or apples are at their peak in the fall. And you're not going to have access to these things.
I think that education is coming pretty rapidly, though. I think
Marilyn
was talking about the strawberries, and we commented that we probably have run out of time for strawberries this year.
Yep. And Ohio's peach crop was destroyed, so they're allowing farmers markets to sell Georgia peaches. But it's a two-edged sword. I think it's a wonderful thing that we can still get asparagus from Chile in the winter.
Yes.
But on the other hand, this is the time to be eating sweet corn and tomatoes and basil and stuff like that, and enjoy it. This is the, you know, 3 or 4 month window where we've got, it's the best.
Well, and you're right. You could still get asparagus from Chile in the winter, but it simply doesn't taste the same as what you're going to get in April.
Yeah, right. And those of us who are familiar with the cycles, you know, we can tell which are the real farm-to-table restaurants and, you know, which kind of are trying to play to that fad.
Right, right.
But yes, education is essential in that.
Well, and I think, Catherine, what our sustainability strategist was telling us earlier at the Crest, they are trying to do that. They're trying to reach out and make people aware of what's available and what grows and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I also think giving recipes is part of the education process. When I used to shop in Brooklyn many, many years ago from the Italian grocer, and they don't even exist anymore there, who sold out of crates, and there was really sawdust on the floor. But this was only 1987 or something. It wasn't that long ago. If I didn't know one of the fruits or vegetables, if I wasn't familiar with it, he would give me a recipe. Tell me a recipe right there.
if folks want to know, we'll do a shameless plug. You know, Franklin Park.
You always have one of those at the ready.
Well, actually, I have two today. The first one is Franklin Park Conservatory has a wonderful garden that was supported by Scotts, and they grow lots of things, including berries, lots of herbs, some vegetables. And Steve and I are doing a cooking class there on August 5th, and we give away the recipes.
It's farm to table, and Rich is going to grow some fresh. We're going to do a ratatouille and homemade bread and stuff like that. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Inspired by your favorite movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Yeah.
Thank you, and thank you for supporting this. I'm really enjoying selling to the public and growing things that are being eaten in my neighborhood.
Well, keep it up.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Well, in addition to talking about local and fresh foods we've been talking about, some of the restaurants that surprisingly didn't quite make it this summer, and Alex's Bistro was another surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may not be closed.
Well, and I went to their website, and it's up and...
They said that the sign says closed for maintenance, open soon. So it's a two-edged sword. We want people to know not to show up there, but on the other hand, we've had a couple instances where we announced their demise too soon and it hurt the restaurant. So
it's like Bodega has reopened, as I understand. Yeah.
Well, and Bodega was closed and that was for 6 weeks or so for maintenance. Yeah.
So it does happen.
And rest in peace, the Columbus Food and Wine Affair is not going to be this year for after 11 fantastic years.
Is that a permanent thing, or is that
appears to be?
What a shame. We have second shameless plug.
No. This isn't plugging you.
This isn't plugging me, but the Columbus State has had an annual event that is similar to the Food and Wine, and it's going to be on August 12th. It's called the Taste of the Future, and they've got a lot of local chefs, the breweries, the distilleries, probably 100 different providers of this thing. It's on August 12th. I think it's a real bargain. It's like $100.
$100, and for all you can eat and drink and— It's sort of like Dine Originals. It's just a wonderful, fun evening.
So it's an evening-like taste of Dine Originals where you go and sample. Right. Where is it?
It's at Columbus State in their quad, more
pavilion,
or less.
Yeah.
So these are culinary students who are preparing all these?
And some of it is to just bring attention to the great program that they have at Columbus State, which really is very good. Steve can tell you about some of the folks that they are honoring at this.
They're honoring... the chef at Hudson 29, Jonathan Bash, and Curtis Duffy, a very well-known chef from Chicago, has a restaurant called Grace. And Columbus's Rocky Fork Country Club's Josh Wickham is
who just got a major award.
He's actually cooking at the American Culinary Federation National Chef of the Year competition at the end of the month in Colorado or Kansas City. But
Kansas City.
It's a huge deal. So.
Yeah, so it's a good program and good one to support.
August 12th.
Okay, and we will be back in just a moment. And we're back. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. We're talking with three reviewers this morning, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover. They all write for our blog, wosu.org/chefsinthecity. The most recent blog, Rich, is from you.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while, Michael Simon, the famous Cleveland chef who has opened a place called Lola's and I think Lolita's, and he's credited with kind of the rebirth.
Cleveland.
Yeah, the rebirth of restaurants in Cleveland has deigned to come to Columbus and open one of his casual restaurants, and it's essentially a burger place called B-Spot. It's located on Morris Road, on Hamilton Road, just north of Morris, probably a couple blocks. Great burgers, great design burgers. He calls his cuisine meat-centric food, and it shows. I think the burger I had the other day called a Fat Doug was a burger with pastrami on top of that, and then slaw and melted cheese on a great brioche.
Oh,
it was very
goodness.
Good. Yeah. And there are several of those that have won national contests. So Steve's headed there right after.
Oh, my
me.
God.
You know,
there goes my
me.
Diet.
It strikes me, though, that a sandwich called Fat Doug would not appeal much to women.
Well, you know, but they
absolutely, Marilyn.
Yeah, but they, you know, they drink fat tire beer, so why not that?
So what are some of the other offerings there?
They do have a couple of salads, but
and they do turkey burgers, right?
Turkey burgers. And they do some healthy stuff. I don't mean to be. And they one of the nice things, and it's there all the time, and there's no charge for it. Is a pretty big pickled relish bar. Where they have all kinds of pickles.
For the burgers?
Yeah, for the burgers. Or just, you know, they give you
I
a little
pickles.
Carton and you can just run up and get, they have two kinds of chips, one kosher and one sweet hot. They've got kimchi, they've got pickled onions, various peppers. I thought that was a real plus. They also have a heck of a beer collection, but. And they have great milkshakes that they've named as well. So,
there I go again.
Yeah. I really liked it. It's one of the best things Cleveland has done in a long time.
And we have talked intermittently about Angry Bear in Clintonville opening up, and now it has probably, what,
couple
2 weeks.
Months
ago?
Yeah, a couple months, yeah. A
couple months. And it's getting rave reviews.
Well, for me it is. I was there Wednesday, and it was just a wonderful, we had a great time. Same place as Sage on North High Street, just south of Doddridge. And we started out, I started out in a smiley face because their wine markups are wonderful and there's a very small wine selection. But they were very well priced at about double retail, maybe plus a few bucks. And we had two different red wines that were, it was not just Mary and me, there was another couple. But Chef Tyler Minnis has done it. They're focusing on farm to table. The guys have roots at Latitude 41 and Bazzi Italia. The old bartender from Bazzi, it was there, Phil. He's sort of a host and bartender. But it was just a lovely dinner. We had, I particularly liked the salmon tartare, well done. And we also had a Bloody Mary tenderloin tartare, a standard beef tartare. But it had little touches on, it was served on slate with a little, like an olive caramel and a bacon reduction that was almost a powder. It was very well, it reminded me of Veritas in the sort of the edgy cuisine and nice presentations. But the prices were a bargain. We also had a hanger steak with a horseradish panna cotta and shiitake mushrooms and a piece of potato, not au gratin, that was deep fried into a little crispy nugget. The dessert we had was...
You passed on that, didn't you, because it was deep fried?
I didn't. I was trying to... my fork was going over to the other guy's plate. But,
just waving at it.
And for dessert, a special preserved lemon pudding with freshly made beignets plopped on a sort of a smear of bittersweet chocolate ganache. I rest my case now. It was good. Yeah. It was really good.
And they're also offering brunch, I understand.
Brunch on Sunday. They're open Monday through Saturday. And I was also, the appetizers were like 8 to 13, and the entrees were like 13 to, for the burger, to 26. But most of them were in the neighborhood right around $20. So they were well priced. And they're starting, and it's a comfortable little place, and we had very good service.
And what about parking? Is this more of
There's a parking lot in the back, and it was full at the time, but I waited a few minutes while everybody else was eating, and no, I was thinking about a valet parking concession, by the way.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
I've been to a couple of new restaurants lately, both of which I liked a lot. Steve beat me to writing the review on Jobu Ramen. It's a new spot up on Grandview Avenue in the old Mazza space. Mazza's not out of business. They're just down the center.
Now, are they still open, though, for walk-ins, or is it just a catering operation?
You know, I'm not sure.
What,
I saw
Mazza?
Them on
the,
I think Mazza's
no,
open.
No, they just were reviewed by John. They've got a beautiful new space. I think that was yesterday's John... No, it was G.A. Benton this week, but he reviewed the new space and found it to be very pretty. It's just two doors down, but the Jobu is great.
Jobu was excellent. The ramen craze kind of started on the coasts. I think this might be our first one here in Columbus.
I think so.
But this is not your, college late night meal ramen. This is really good stuff, done in a, homemade stock. The noodles are, perfectly al dente. It's like they must par cook them and then, give them a flash, ice bath or something because it comes out super fresh. Mm-hmm. One of the best things I had there was steam buns. And if you think of the typical steam bun, it's, the pastry around, some pre-cooked meat.
Yeah.
This is more like in the form of a taco. It's got a chili aioli. I had... it comes a 2-to-1 order for $9, definitely worth it. I had one with pork belly, which was fantastic, microgreens, and then also one with fried chicken. I know Steve had the walleye.
Oh, it was fabulous.
Which I think is a special, that was great. They also had a terrific cold plate appetizer, kimchi and pickles, with about 6 different vegetables, pickled, all in different solutions according to their, sugar content. There was a red potato pickled that was kind of sweet. They had a red onion that was actually hickory smoked and then pickled. Rice, daikon, kimchi, of course. But couldn't say enough good things about this place. I really liked it. The price point's about $12 for a bowl of ramen, which might sound high, but it was really, really good. The other place I've been to, the Red Brick Tap and Grill, which, funny enough, used to be my old local watering hole. When I lived in Merion Village, it was called the Red Brick Tavern. It was kind of a dive bar.
Brock
and Gates.
Yeah.
George Stephanidis of the Easy Street Cafe, mm-hmm. who's very well known in, for doing good stuff around Columbus, reopened it, completely redecorated it.
Well, and it took a lot longer, I think, than they
were
expecting.
Yeah, well, I mean, once you go in, I mean, yeah, I took Cindy and she, you know, we were both blown away because we'd been in there when it used to be the Red Brick Tavern. But the food was great. The pizza was especially excellent. The crust. They slow smoke a lot of their own meats in the back patio area. I would highly recommend you get down there. Yeah. Really good addition for Merion Village.
One thing, all these things we've been talking about for the last 10 or 15 minutes will be on the website by next week, or some of them are up now and some are more. So check them out because it's a more thorough review with the you know, their websites and stuff like that. So it's a handy way to look at it before you go.
You have Nick some time to get back in.
Yeah, Nick's not back till Monday, so
he's our editor.
We're a little behind.
Well, your editor and your webmaster.
Yeah, webmaster. Yeah.
292-8513, if you'd like to talk with our experts. You can give us a call. Rich Terapek, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, who, as they said, write for our blog at wosu.org/chefsinthecity. There are a number of new places, as we mentioned. One of them is on High Street, is another burger spot.
Bear Burger?
In the Short North.
Yeah, Bear Burger.
Yeah, I think I wrote something about that on the blog. It's three guys who were from Ohio State, moved to New York, fell in love with this local restaurant called Bear Burger, of which there are several stores throughout Manhattan and Brooklyn. Talked the owner, it's still just owned by him, into coming to Columbus because he thought he'd never let them open a restaurant in Columbus. That just wasn't going to happen. And he came to Columbus, visited the Short North, and said, sure, give it a shot. It's located where the old Yankee Trader used to be. And they have bison burger, turkey burger, duck burger, burger. they have some terrific appetizers, as I recall. Be sure to get some of those to split. They've got some sweet potato fritters that are wonderful and chicken finger kind of things. It's an upscale burger place. It's very popular. Be sure to get there and count on about 15 minutes to get in. Yeah.
And I just have written and submitted, but it won't be up yet, the one on the Refectory. Now, we all know the Refectory is considered to be one of the top restaurants in Columbus, have the great wine list, but they've got some other things going on that I think are really cool. And Richie accused me of being a shill for the Refectory, but I really like these special activities they've got.
No, they do great stuff. I love the Refectory. I just, not as much as
Steve. Kamal, he really loves it.
I was gushing. The bistro menu, $23.95 for three courses in the bar or on the patio. Jazz nights with four-course dinners and jazz. Chamber music nights. We're going to the 10 for 10 on Monday night if either of you guys want to go. It's 10 French wines.
I thought you were inviting the audience.
Marilyn, come along.
We are.
They're almost sold out, but there are 10 wines, 10 of $10 and 10 for $20 that you can taste for $10 with bread. And they're having a champagne at state minimum retail all of August. So I'm a little bit of a giddy about it, but
Well, and Kamal said it ranked one of the best wine cellars in the state for a long time.
Oh yeah.
So
and yeah. They're the only four diamond restaurant in Ohio.
Not to mention the service is impeccable.
Yeah.
I get an email from them, I think usually every week, and it is astonishing how much they're doing there. 292-8513. We're talking with our restaurant critics, and Doug has called in. Hello, Doug.
Hey, how are you?
Good, you?
I'm doing great. I'm wondering if you or any of the chefs there have ever been to the historic dinner club that's put on at Elena's with the Columbus Historical Society.
I have not. I've heard about them. Evan Walker's wife, I believe, is one involved from Columbus Underground and putting them together.
Yeah, Dan Evans is putting those together. It's fantastic.
They've got another
Walker
one coming
Evans.
Up.
I'm sorry.
I was going to write a blog.
August 12th. Yeah, August 12th, they're going to be re-celebrating the Clermont.
So they got to have banana cream pie.
Absolutely. I mean, they've celebrated the High Line. They've celebrated the Kahiki. Most recently, they celebrated the Marimore. And with Columbus being such a food city, it's really interesting to look at the roots of that. I mean, Duncan Hines was reviewing the Marimore when nothing else in Columbus was getting reviewed. And in fact, Alice Toklas and Gertrude Stein dined at the Merrimore because they were such good friends of Alice Schilly, who was designing the chocolate boxes for the candies.
Yeah, very famous local artist.
And Elena does such a great job of, from what I've heard, of recreating these restaurants, their signature dishes. If only I could gone and had a Merrimore ice cream ball with fudge sauce.
What a great idea. I actually wasn't aware of that. Yeah, that's wonderful.
It's a neat.
I wish we could get the
word out.
It's
the same night, though, as the Columbus Date thing, so I'm not going to make this one either.
Oh, that does.
So it's always sold out. It's $100 a plate, but if you guys can get a chance to get out there, Elena does marvels with those menus and re-celebrating.
And for those of us who are old enough and been around long enough to remember all those places, it's terrific.
I would also note that Elena just celebrated 15 years. She had a little cocktail party to celebrate her 15 years in business, which seems like she's been in business actually longer than that.
And probably then, seems like it to her as well.
No, but it's a great landmark for her. And Tutto Vino, the wine bar in Dublin, moved down the street a little bit, and they have a beautiful new facility, and I always enjoy going there.
And Doug, how often are these dinners?
The dinner clubs are quarterly.
Yeah.
I know that Ann posted on the Columbus Historical Society's website, columbushistory.org. But if you have an opportunity, I know Elena promotes it as well at the restaurant. So there'll be another one coming up in the fall as to be determined.
Okay, well, you've done a good job of advertising it today as well.
Well, if you could send me some information, and I'll do a short blog that we can put up on the website where everybody can see it. So
I'd be happy to.
I think they've sent me something, so they have my email.
Yeah, and I've received it as well. I can forward it.
Well, thank you.
Fantastic program. We love it. So I keep up the great jobs with the chefs.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for calling. 292-8513. We're talking with food critics, restaurant critics, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover. And Mike is joining us. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I was just curious if the panel had any thoughts on, this isn't a Columbus restaurant, but my wife and I just went there this week up in Delaware called Veritas.
Yeah, it's one of Steve's favorites. Yeah, we've talked about it a little
bit. It was Columbus Monthly's top restaurant of the year. It's our favorite restaurant, new restaurant
of the
year.
Well, I think John Christensen made it.
Christensen loves it. It's just so creative. I just mentioned it earlier when I was talking about the Angry Bear, some of the same things, the really creative, edgy, sometimes, you know, a little bit almost over-the-top plates, beautifully presented, and it's absolutely a great place.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I just was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's in the market in Central Ohio.
Well, everybody raves about it. I have yet to get up there, but it sounds like it's wonderful. 292-8513, we just have a couple of minutes left if you'd like to weigh in on the conversation.
Marilyn, I wanted to mention one thing that that we experienced. It took son Brad there and tried to get Rich to let me take his kids, but he didn't think it would be something I could handle, I guess.
or me.
Yeah. there's a thing called Taco Tuesdays down at a place called The Kitchen, which is run by Ann and Jen, who opened this as a banquet location, a cooking class location. It's on Livingston and, like, not Mohawk, maybe two blocks from 185, if you know where that is.
So it's in German Village.
In German Village.
It's in the old video store, right?
On Tuesday evening, only Tuesday evening, the whole community can come in. You get tacos, terrific tacos, for $3 or $4. Really creative stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Send me in, Coach.
Yeah. Okay, so this is called The Kitchen.
The Kitchen.
And it's in a commercial building?
They've turned it into a commercial building. They've got a great kitchen. They cater out of that, but they also allow folks with gourmet groups to come and use the kitchen and have parties. You can have a reception there, and they have their own cooking classes. But it's fun if you want to sample something down in the Village. It's quite the scene.
And this is only on Tuesday night?
Only on Tuesday night. Starts at 5 o'clock.
Okay. Well, we just have about a minute left. If you want to weigh in on something, now's the time to do it.
Last call?
Last call.
Stoff Coffee Roasters is opening in the North Market. The Crafty Pine in Worthington is from the folks in Red Dude. It's a Red Rude Dog. It's in the old Hoggies Gallows Pit Barbecue location in Linworth. There's a new Hinckley's in the former Doc Henderson's in Marysville. Cuco's Taqueria now has a taco truck, which I'm excited about.
Oh, great.
And don't forget Dine Originals, first Wednesday of the month, a lot of the restaurants.
And they've got gift certificates available on their website now.
On sale.
Great deal. Yeah.
What, $50 for $25?
Thanks very much. We've been talking this morning with restaurant reviewers Rich Tarapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, who write reviews for our website, wosu.org/chefs in the city. Thanks to everybody who called in or wrote today. I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll do this again next month.